CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Quad. India, Australia, Japan, and the United States. The Quad. I welcome Michael Austin of the Hoover Institution, whose book includes the predicate for the Quad, why these four nations in the Indo-Pacific join together. China's the answer. Asia's new geopolitics, essays on reshaping the Indo-Pacific, is Michael's anticipation of where we are now. But the pandemic, and then after the pandemic, NATO, in these last days, the President of the United States addressing NATO and others have identified China and Russia as adversaries, adversaries of NATO, adversaries of Europe, adversaries of the United States. So putting all these together, I see an article in Economist magazine about the Quad. Is this the moment for the Quad? Michael has a very helpful contribution to this article talking about the Quad Plus. So, Michael, let's begin with the definition of the Quad in real time now, post-pandemic, if it is, during pandemic in some parts of the world. And given NATO's remarks, how does NATO and Quad Plus all work together in this changing landscape? Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening, John. Well, this is a great question because we're at the very beginning of a new and revitalized Quad. The Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, which, as you mentioned, is Australia, India, Japan, and the U.S., was started very hesitantly back in 2007. It essentially lay fallow until 2017. President Trump and his administration revitalized it at the level of having meetings among the foreign secretary, secretary of state level. But the Biden administration has really embraced it, and I think that's a very good thing. You had two meetings within the first 2 months of the administration, one at the foreign secretary level and one where the president met his counterparts. And now they're talking about having an in-person Quad meeting. So the real question that faces them, of course, is what do you do about this? It's not a formal alliance. This is not something that's designed to take the place of the U.S. Defense agreements with Australia or Japan. It very importantly brings India in, but there are questions as to how much India ultimately will want to do, as well as the other nations. The fact that, as you mentioned, NATO now and other liberal groupings of nations are identifying China and Russia as adversaries and threats, really what they're saying is that these countries are threats to the international order. They're threats to the rule of law. They're threats to the way that we have done business and respected sovereignty of other nations and protected intellectual rights and so on and so forth. So the Quad has to decide if it's going to be simply a talking shop, which is important, but they've already gone beyond that to some degree. So one thing you've seen are naval exercises. Those actually began a while ago, but they have expanded in the past year. These are the Malabar exercises hosted by India. And in fact, you're now getting other countries involved in those as well, the French and the British. You saw the big rollout of what they called vaccine diplomacy, that the Quad countries would help produce and supply vaccines around the world. And, of course, with the India disaster of coronavirus and Japan's slow rollout, of course, there's questions as to how effective that'll be. But all of that, John, as you indicated, that's just the beginning. The question is, does the Quad formalize its defense relations? Will all the members agree to that? What does that mean? Will they sign some sort of defense agreement? Will they come up with a regular set of activities that they're going to engage in? And most importantly, or not most importantly, but equally importantly, again, as you indicated, how will they interact with NATO? How will they interact with the EU? How will they interact with other nations that see stability in the Indo-Pacific is central to their own economies and global stability?
The Economist, because out of London it makes sense, contributes two anecdotes, and it's a puzzle how this connects to the larger story. One is that the United Kingdom, Global Britain, I believe is what Boris Johnson now presents itself, has a strike group, an aircraft carrier and attendant ships to show the flag in East Asia. The French have a submarine that's traveled through South China Sea, showing the flag as well. These are two European colonial powers back in Asia. How do they contribute to the Quad and to stability in the region?
Well, again, that is something that the countries are just beginning to discuss, and there's certainly interest in the part, I think in particular, on the part of the United Kingdom to get involved with the Quad, also with France. And you're right, this is the first carrier strike group that Britain has assembled since the Falklands War of 1982. The centerpiece is their brand new aircraft carrier, the Queen Elizabeth. She and the strike group are going on what will be essentially a year-long cruise. It won't be just to East Asia, but that's where they will wind up. And for several years, the British have touted that the strike group and Queen Elizabeth will go through the South China Sea to uphold freedom of navigation. But there are now expanded agreements that Britain has with Japan, with Australia about naval exercises. It's a little trickier with India, but there is an enormous amount of interest and appetite in the UK for returning what they would say west of Suez after having withdrawn back in the 1970s. And we shouldn't forget that both France and Britain have a lot of territory in what we call the Indo-Pacific, in the southern Indian Ocean, in the western Pacific, in Oceania. British have territory. They also have relations with Commonwealth nations. The French have quite a lot of territory. Both of them have well over a million citizens or passport holders living in this region. So they actually have serious interests that are security and economic and political. And I think that the Quad should be reaching out to talk about a Quad Plus that can include other countries. It could include South Korea, for example. It could include the Philippines, potentially, and even Vietnam. But when you think about countries like Britain and France, countries that have real capabilities. I mean, they're not as much as the United States, but no one has as much as the United States. They could still play a very significant role, given how much more limited the U.S. is towards the Northeast Asia part of the Indo-Pacific, as opposed to, let's say, the southern Indian Ocean.
I want to take members of the Quad one at a time, Michael, because these have different histories. And we'll start with India, as you mentioned. Boris Johnson, because of the pandemic, has not been able to visit India. Mr. Modi, extremely successful politically, but the pandemic has damaged a lot of the Indian economy, and we can only imagine there's going to be another side of it. India, at the same time, remains at loggerheads with China in the high Himalayas. And a year later, I think we're this week is the week that we remember that confrontation. Since then, India has pulled back in social media. The apps were banished. There have been reason to believe that though India depends on materials coming out of China, it's against any more cooperation with China. Is India, as a member of the Quad, does it have a separate track with China? It seems almost not even adversarial. It seems like a feud between the world's two largest powers, but they have military array against each other with, I believe, thousands of troops.
They do, up in the Himalayas, in the passes, in between territory that China controls and India claims. Let's not forget they fought a border war in 1962. There is something called the actual line of control that runs between this contested territory. And the two sides have been facing off. And as you mentioned, last year there was a clash in what had been a demilitarized, but an unarmed zone. Neither side was supposed to bring in weapons. And so you had a clash using stones and bricks and bats and iron pipes, in which up to 20 Indian soldiers were killed and an unknown number of Chinese soldiers. The two sides withdrew, tamped down the tensions after that. But in recent weeks, actually, the Indians have been moving troops back into the region. The Chinese have been doing the same thing. They're trying to buttress their positions there in the concern that during the spring and summer, you could see a move into territory. And there is always this probing, particularly by the Chinese, into Indian territory. So relations between the two are extremely tense. They're bad. Indian ships have been harassed by Chinese Navy ships in the South China Sea, for example, in the past. India is very worried about the One Belt, One Road initiative of China that seeks to link up Eurasia in trade and investment agreements, and is worried about being isolated from that. or isolated because of that. Also, of course, the Chinese alliance with Pakistan and support from Beijing for Islamabad is a primary security concern on the part of the Chinese, so on the part of the Indians. So relations between Beijing and New Delhi are extremely tense, and it would not take much to tip them over into open conflict. I think that's one reason, of course. You've seen New Delhi under Modi reach out to Japan over the past decade, particularly with the former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. India, again, reaching out to the United States, not quite as close a relationship as you saw, for example, during the George W. Bush years. But there is a constant engagement between Washington and New Delhi that, again, was something you didn't see 20 years ago. But also thinking about other partners in the region and how it can use international fora to promote its own interests. So this is a great power competition that has the potential to be extremely disruptive, I mean, potentially extremely devastating, but what is also one that allows opportunity, I would say, for Quad countries and liberal countries to work with New Delhi to help improve its capabilities, to share information, and in essence create a community that is interested in upholding international stability and order.
I'm speaking with Michael Austin of the Hoover Institution. We're discussing the Quad, a feature in The Economist magazine out of London, points to the Quad as a possible response to the Chinese aggression, the wolf warrior, the threat to the region in Xinjiang, Hong Kong. We're discussing the Quad members one at a time, and when we come back, Australia, which is also at direct loggerheads with China, there's much sharp talk. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.